Christine. I've been a librarian in the public library system in New York City for 19 years and a trade union activist for most of that time. I had no experience of anarchists in my union or in my workplace. I've never met an anarchist organizer. And Duke organizes for the union that I'm a member of, AFSCME. In New York City, we are the largest municipal workers' union. There are 125,000 members in our council, and it is one of the most notoriously corrupt, paralyzed, ossified, you name it, you know, any horror story that you can think of, stolen elections, stolen dues money, any level of corruption, nepotism, and patronage that is stereotypical in unions occurs on a regular basis in my union. I like the show and tell stuff, so I brought a couple of things to show you to illustrate some points that Duke made. When you get into, probably as everybody here knows, when you get into a real union, the militant tactics that Duke described just kind of fall by the wayside. In New York State, and in many other states actually, not only are public sector workers forbidden from organizing, we're also forbidden from striking. New York State has what's called the Taylor Law. It's I forget what the official name of it is, but it was created in the 60s after a series of very successful public sector strikes. Garbage men, transit workers had a series of very successful strikes in the 60s, and in retaliation, New York State passed a law called the Taylor Law, the law that prevents us from striking. So now, when we're faced with the worst budget cuts and service cuts and impending layoffs and attrition that we've faced in a very long time, we don't strike. We have a fight back rally. And the fight back rally is held on April 29th, 2 days before May Day, with no good reason whatsoever why it couldn't have been held on May Day, you know, to kind of create a link with workers' movements and workers' resistance and workers' consciousness, but, you know, it's in the interest of the bureaucrats to keep us passive, so, you know, these things are kind of, you know, they're highly disempowering. I wouldn't exactly call it a stunt, but it's a highly disempowering display. Of 125,000 members, 15,000 showed up to demonstrate to protect their jobs. It's kind of a poor show. With so many devastating cuts being put into place. The other thing I can show you is, this is our public workers' newspaper in New York called The Chief. It's all the civil service employees. And here's another story about a corruption scandal in my union. And I'll just read you this little bit. It crystallizes exactly why I've become a revolutionary. One investigator who played a significant role in rooting out corruption within the union 5 years ago said that the potential for impropriety by top DC-37 officials has remained because they've never changed the system, they just changed the seats. So for almost 20 years, I was a reformer in my union. My local has a history of progressive activism, and that's where I developed a sense of left politics. I haven't come to anarchism as a convert from any other political tendency, but after Seattle, in New York, there was, as Duke mentioned, an explosion of anarchism, and there was a small group that formed through the Direct Action Network that was a labor solidarity working group. And for years, I had been doing labor support and labor activism, and I heard about this group, and I started going to their meetings because we needed help with a campaign that we were running. And so I met anarchists for the first time and became an anarchist shortly thereafter. And I've been, until October, I was a board member, an executive board member on my union, but decided to resign when I've been doing it a long time, but I also felt I couldn't reconcile my anarchist politics with what I was being asked to do through the union. And so my strategy now in the union and in my workplace in the building where I work is to introduce anarchist politics and anarchist values and, you know, all of these things that may seem very simplistic, anti-authoritarianism, anti-hierarchical work structures, you know, things that seem quite basic, but in a very corporatized environment as the New York Public Library has become, this is fairly radical. You know, libraries are highly bureaucratized, highly structured workplaces. And over the years that I've been working in the library, it's gone from, you know, the kind of friendly workplace that I started at to a really prime example of neoliberalist work practices put into place. You know, we're under the gun with all kinds of added work through attrition of jobs. You know, we're all picking up more slack. We all sit in cubicles. You know, all of that stuff is very common in my job. So on a very fundamental level, I'm trying to talk to my colleagues and my coworkers and just kind of present a total shift in vision from the way that they've been accustomed to working. I'm going to end soon too, but the other thing I wanted to mention is the anti-war work that I've been doing. In New York City, there is a labor activist group that formed called New York City Labor Against the War, and this is a very broad coalition of trade unionists and other, you know, union people who have been organizing union members to demonstrate and come out against the war. And as we're moving into this next phase of, you know, what do we do next? It's an anti-colonial tactic, perhaps an anti-imperialism tactic. What we've been focusing on is that we need to make the anti-war movement now a pro-worker movement. Driving home over and over the cost of war is exactly what's creating cuts in services, losses in jobs. You know, again, those seemingly fundamental principles that not a lot of people tend to put together.